You're listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, a weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients while having a great work-life balance. Last week was the second conference of the Effective Statistician, and it was an absolute amazing experience. Outstanding speakers, and we have recorded all of that. So if you want to get the recordings from that conference with amazing speakers like Andy Grieve and Anja Schiel and many more, then you can get that for a small nominal price from the homepage. Just go to The Effective Statistician, check the courses at the top of the homepage, or just go to the show notes of this episode and you will find everything there. Today I'm talking with Thomas Debray. He's an absolute expert in terms of network meta-analysis, personalized medicine, real-world data, all these kind of different things. So it promises to be a really, really nice episode. Stay tuned. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. PSI, together with FSPI, has lots of different special interest groups. These are great groups for you to join and learn more about a specific topic, engage in activities around it, network with others who are also interested in this topic, and help move our community forward. There are lots of these different things, and you can find all of them on the PSI homepage at psiweb.org. There's something about real-world evidence, real-world analytics, that is probably really interesting for you if you listen to this one. Or there's something about biomarkers that is really good. Or there's something about HTA. There are lots of different really, really nice special interest groups. So check them out. And you can actually become a member of them even if you're not a PSI member. However, I can really, really recommend you to become a PSI member, especially currently, as is always an annual membership, and then you can benefit from all the different PSI activities, for example, see many different PSI webinars, the video on demand, content library, and lots more. So check out psiweb.org to learn more about the six and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of The Effective Statistician. I'm super happy to have Thomas Debray again on this podcast. And this will be the first in a series of episodes where we talk about personalized medicine. Hi, Thomas. Great to have you back on the show.
Hi. Well, thanks for having me. It's a great opportunity to have this conversation and talk a bit more about personalized medicine.
Yeah, personalized medicine is something that is very close to your heart, and you are doing a lot of things on that already. Since we last talked on the show, a couple of things have evolved, and maybe you can give a little bit of an overview of where you are at the moment, especially with your company.
Yeah, that's right. So I think last time we spoke, I was still a scientist working in academia. And I mean, yeah, I think at some point I realized that, okay, I'm not sure academia is the place I fit in very well. So I started looking around what other type of environments I could thrive in, where I could, contribute to innovation while at the same time also be more, on the applied side. And so I realized that I really enjoy being a consultant, solving problems, but also adopting innovative methods, but also tailoring them to local needs and local circumstances, and kind of taking them out of the theoretical paradigm and really putting them in a context where they can actually, you know, be used to derive answers. And that's, you know, it's quite tricky in the sense that it requires to understand like complex methods and complex settings, and at the same time, you know, packaging them in a way that, you know, they can actually be used to address, you know, more real problems basically. And so, yeah, so I founded a company recently. I think by now it's probably 1 or 2 years ago, where I both provide individual consulting. So I both, you know, work as an individual consultant on various projects, but I also embark on projects that are outsourced to my company, where I have done, you know, different specialists that are helping me working on various solutions that range from, you know, specialized R packages for precision medicine to other type of programs, as well as projects where we try to, you know, address more complicated questions by leveraging, you know, recently developed methodologies.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. So if you're working in this area and you need help in terms of observational research, if you need help in terms of network meta-analysis, these kind of different areas, yeah, feel free to connect with Thomas. Yeah. One way is probably LinkedIn. What are other ways people should contact you?
Yeah, good point. Yeah, so I mean, I think my most active platform is probably LinkedIn, but I mean, I also do have a website. The URL is fromdatatowisdom.com. At the moment, it's being updated, but it should be, I think by the time this podcast is released, it should probably be online. Other than that, yeah, I intend to, I mean, I've not attended conferences for the last few years due to COVID and other reasons. But I intend to, you know, to get back to it at some point in the near future, just to align a bit which time of the year is a good time to attend a conference. But so it will be a bit conditional on that to figure out which ones I will be attending. And otherwise by email, I suppose.
Yeah. Do you already plan to attend the PSI conference in Amsterdam in June?
Yeah, that's in June. Yeah, so I have to check if I'm in Netherlands in June. But if that's the case, yes, I would be happy to attend that one.
Yeah, that will be definitely a great one. So yeah, reach out to Thomas either via his website, which we'll link to in the show notes, or to his LinkedIn profile, which we'll also link into the show notes. Okay, let's dive into personalized medicine. It's probably a very, very important concept that we go to since many years, and in the recent years, it has, I think, got a pretty big boost. But before we talk about it, what is actually personalized medicine?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I think a lot of the name gives already some indication, right? So it's medicine and personalized, right? So it's medicine tailored to individuals. I think that's a general kind of gist of it. And the main ideas, the main background there is that a lot of medical research that is happening, that is being conducted, is focusing on populations, right? And there is a good reason why that is the case, because it's a lot more effective to focus on populations. And so clinical trials, of course, you know, they study the safety and efficacy of interventions on, you know, very specific type of populations, with the expectation that whatever findings you obtain from this type of studies, they would generalize, you know, to somewhat different populations that you encounter in clinical practice. And this has been the status quo for a long time. And, you know, it works for various good reasons. It's a status quo that is, you know, that has been maintained for a long time. The only point is that I think we come to the realization, and probably we were already at, you know, for a long time, but that is effect estimates that we obtain from clinical trials, you know, these average treatment effects, even though that on average, you know, they give expectations that are, you know, realistic and that are, you know, valid and, you know, can be used for decision making. For individual persons and for individual patients, these estimates may not always be, you know, very applicable. And that's because of, you know, treatment response can vary quite a bit between individuals. And some of this variation can be, you know, just to natural variation, right? Or just to chance. I mean, there might not necessarily be a reason behind this type of variation, but there's also a lot of variation that might be related to, for example, treatment effect modifiers. For example, that treatments might be more effective in, let's say, in younger patients or in older patients or in more diseased patients or in less diseased patients. You know, over the last few years, we've seen some medications that are, you know, that are given on indication, right? Based on let's say, like genetic profiles or other type of markers. So this is also an example where, you know, where you provide medication or treatments to, you know, not to every individual who is diseased, but to only to a specific type of individuals who are more likely to benefit from the treatment. And so this is also where, you know, personalized medicine comes in, right? Where you try to understand, okay, who will benefit from treatment? Can I identify who will benefit from treatment? Can I identify how much they will benefit from treatment? And can I kind of tailor, you know, my strategy for treating individuals in such a way that patients receive the treatment that is most likely, you know, to be of benefit of them. And so when I talk about benefit, I'm not only talking about, you know, efficacy, but it could also relate to, you know, like side effects, safety, and so forth. And so, of course, it's not a black and white discrepancy, right? Because, I mean, we have often, of course, investigated subgroups, right, where we are saying, like, look, we understand that treatments may not be equally effective or equally safe in all individuals. So there is, of course, already for a long time been interested also in investigating subgroup effects, right? For example, comparing, you know, treatment effects in males versus females, or some other, you know, type of biologically driven subgroups. And personalized medicine is basically, you know, stretching further in that direction, right? Where you're trying to get even, you know, more towards more smaller subgroups, you know, subgroups that are defined by multiple covariates, multiple characteristics, rather than just, you know, one binary, let's say, threshold deciding whether, you know, you belong in subgroup A or in subgroup B. So it's really about trying to get, I mean, it's like an event horizon, right? You will never get to the individual treatment effect for one specific person that is named, you know, Thomas de Bray or, you know, or Alexander Skak, but you can try to get in that direction, right? You can try to identify what is the treatment effect in individuals who are, you know, relatively young, have a limited number of comorbidities, have this specific variation of the disease and so forth. So that's the ambition, right, of personalized medicine, to really try to understand how specific type of individuals could benefit from specific treatments.
Yeah, it is. When I listen to this, for me, it's a typical trade-off between bias and precision. Yeah. So when we think about average treatment effects for all patients with, let's say, diabetes, yeah, then of course we can get the biggest precision because we have the biggest sample size, very easy to find many patients for that, and that we get a very, very precise average treatment effect. However, if we go into smaller subgroups of maybe only patients that are younger than 30, that have a BMI of over 35, and that have been treated for X years and have these kind of comorbidities, and the more we go into these kind of different things, the less patients we have, and so therefore the precision actually goes down. How bias also goes down, yeah, for the bias that we have for a specific patient in this area. Yeah. So imagine that we want to predict the real treatment effect for a specific patient, then there will, you know, the biggest bias on average will always be in the overall population. Yeah, because then most of the patients that you look to predict will be very, very different to this individual patient. And the more homogeneous you get within your data, you get in terms of the bias, but for the cost of precision. And so that is something to basically have in the back of your mind. We want to get as precise as possible while also decreasing the bias. Now, when we think about diabetes, for example, yeah, there's a lot of precision medicine already going on in terms of event-driven adjustments for treatment. If we think about, let's say, you look into certain laboratory values and you treat to a specific target there, or you adjust the dose if you see a specific side effect, or you add treatments if you see something, all these kind of different things. So there will always be this event-driven adjustments. What do you think about these event-driven kind of strategies? How can our statistics knowledge help in that regard?
Well, yeah, I guess the challenge with event-driven decisions is that you have to have the capability, right, to observe these events and to recognize them as an event of interest to make a decision about. So I'm not an expert in diabetes, but I can imagine that it might be quite challenging to follow up all these patients so intensively, right, to monitor the occurrence of these events and then to decide how treatment pathways or doses and so forth should be modified accordingly and in a manner that is appropriate with with the event or sequence of events that has happened. So yeah, so how statistical analysis could help in this is first of all to identify right where events are happening based on data that is available that is routinely collected at the patient, but it could also be used to predict the future occurrence of these type of events and as well to predict how different treatment decisions, for example, the dose or the choice of the treatment or the frequency of how often the treatment should be taken, how these type of strategies as well as changes in those strategies might affect the occurrence of future events that may not be of interest, as well as overall health. So how that would correlate to overall health and based on by discrepancy, so not by discrepancy, but by contrasting, right, its different strategies. On the predicted course of disease in that patient, you can decide whether it would be beneficial to keep the status quo on a certain strategy or perhaps to intensify or de-intensify certain medications to avoid these type of events.
Yeah, I think this is especially where, if you look into real-world evidence, yeah, you can learn a lot from your post-marketing data when you collect how people actually manage all these kind of different things. Yeah, when two people increase a dose, decrease a dose, add another treatment to it to manage side effects, whatsoever. Yeah, all these different strategies you can observe in your real-world data, given that you have good real-world data, and then extrapolate and learn from these kind of things what are good personalized strategies. Now, that is one area to do it. The other is also model-based strategies. What is that? What are model-based strategies for personalized medicine?
Yeah, I would say so that I would say that you are using statistical models, right, to decide which treatments are likely to be most beneficial in individual patients. And I mean, a simple model, I mean, we're already using model-based strategies in the sense that, an average treatment effect is an estimate that comes from a model with, you could say, just one parameter, right, like an overall treatment effect. And that's the parameter that you're using and you're applying it to all the patients, right, to make your decisions. So if your overall treatment effect is let's say it indicates like relative risk reduction in favor of of your treatment, then that's what you assume is applicable to everyone, and so that's the effect that you're applying to everyone. Now you can think of more complex models, right, where you say like, look, my average treatment effect is maybe not like one effect that applies to all individuals, so maybe I have a more the model that defines the risk reduction, for example. Maybe it's not merely determined by the effect of treatment, but maybe there's something else going on. So maybe there is also like an interaction, for example, between the effect of the treatment and some patient level characteristics like age or disease severity or stage of of cancer and so forth. And it could also be prognostic factors. And of course, I mean, prognostic factors, they do not necessarily lead to any differentiation in let's say people who are treated with an active treatment or with like an established treatment or with let's say like a placebo treatment. But nevertheless, when you look on an absolute scale on treatment benefits, and because we often talk about relative benefits, right, like relative risk reduction and relative hazard ratio and so forth. So most of the time when we talk about treatment effects, we're talking about relative effects. But when we are for individual patients, I me personally, I don't really care about relative effect. Like if I'm going to take this treatment, is my risk going to reduce from by 80% or by 60%. I mean, that's great to know, but this information is absolutely useless for me if I don't know what is my risk if I don't take any treatment, right? If I is
What's your baseline risk? Yeah,
my
exactly.
baseline risk. And so that's where the interplay between, you know, prognostic factors, treatment effect modifiers, the relative treatment effects, you know, where all these characteristics that somehow affect my outcome, right? Whether it's related to treatment or not, but where all these factors become important to take into account, at least if I'm interested in my, you know, how, what will my absolute benefit be from receiving the treatment, and how is my risk of developing, you know, an favorable outcomes changing? So how is it if I don't take any treatment? How is it if I take a standard, you know, the standard treatment that is recommended for this condition? And how will it change if I take like a newer treatment, right? That promises certain improvements in, for example, in safety profile or perhaps in efficacy as well.
Yeah. So let me take my kind of characteristics as an example. Yeah. So 50 years old. Yeah. I'm male. I'm white. I'm living in Germany. I'm about 2 meters tall. I'm a little bit overweight. And now I look into the study report and I want to learn more about what is the treatment benefit for me. What I would usually see is, okay, there's first kind of an overall report that says, okay, across all the patients for the primary endpoints, the treatment difference is X. And so you have a response rate in active, you have 80% response, and in placebo, you have 40% response. And then you would have subgroup tables. Yeah, for older patients that are, let's say, older than 40, the difference is that. And for patients that are white, the difference is this. And for males, the difference is this compared to the females, and so on. And so I would get all these kind of different subgroup tables. Now, the problem is, well, okay, I can see heavier patients respond maybe less. And then I see, well, males respond better. And then I see older patients respond also better. And then I see race may make a difference, but not really, really sure. So how can I derive actually my personal treatment effect from such, you know, subgroup analysis?
Yeah, so that's really challenging, I think, because like you say, right, if you look at subgroup effects, you will often find that they are, you know, they might give you conflicting, right, recommendations about whether the treatment is going to be beneficial or not beneficial for you as compared to, you know, a standard placebo treatment. And on top of that, I mean, subgroup effects, I mean, it's well known that they're often prone to, you know, either selective reporting, but also incidental findings, right, like that they are, you know, you tend to find effects there that they might not be reproducible, basically. So they have to be taken with quite a bit of caution. So that's a big challenge, right? So I mean, first of all, if you really want to personalize treatment effects, you would have to adopt an approach, right, that has that ambition, right, in mind. And subgroups, they don't have that. It's not the goal of a subgroup analysis is to personalize treatment effects. It's not the goal of it. The goal of a subgroup analysis is to understand if the treatment effects is different, right, in different subgroups, in you know, let's say males versus females. So that's, I mean, the estimates you get out of the subgroup analysis is telling you an answer to that question, right? Is do you have a different treatment effect in males as compared to in females, or even not, perhaps not even in the comparison, right? In some subgroup analysis, you just estimate separately for males and females, and you may not even answer whether the effect is different. It will just give you two effects with no indication of whether the two are statistically different. So, I mean, subgroup analysis can be useful, but they're not, as far as I am concerned, they're not really intended to give an answer about how individual patients benefit from treatment. And so, yeah, to just come back on the question about model-based approaches. So the idea of model-based approaches for treatment effects, or predictive models for treatment effect, basically. So the concept is similar to what we have with, you know, prognostic models, right? With basically these are multivariable models, right? So models where you have multiple parameters, and one of the parameters is treatment. And do I receive a placebo treatment? Of course, in practice, you don't receive placebo treatments, but in clinical trials, you do. Do you get like an active treatment? Do you get one of the standard care or another treatment? So that would be one of the parameters. And then there's several other parameters, right? Are you male? Do you have like, what's your baseline disease severity? You know, depending on the therapeutic area, there may be several other, you know, variables that either affect your prognosis, so which is, you know, the risk of outcome or the severity of your disease, irregardless of whether you're being treated or not. So there's always factors that, you know, influence your outcome, right? Like if you have a cardiovascular disease, I mean, regardless whether you're taking the treatment or not, I mean, there's a certain course of, you know, of events that is likely to happen. Also, if you're overweight and so forth, you know, like, so there's always like what we call prognostic factors. So factors that affect the outcome anyhow. And then some prognostic factors, they might, you know, increase the efficacy of treatment or they might decrease the efficacy of treatment. So they might interact basically, right, with the treatment itself. So these are, I mean, these are typically the parameters that we're interested in if we're trying to personalize treatment effect, because these so-called treatment effect modifiers are the factors that are going to bring the greatest shift, right, in whether, to what extent I will benefit from a specific treatment or not. And so a big search or a big effort often in personalized medicine is trying to identify, are there any treatment effect modifiers? Can we estimate them? Is their magnitude meaningful? And if that is the case, you know, can we integrate that in these models when we're estimating the average treatment effects? I mean, when we estimate average treatment effects, but also when we are tailoring these average treatment effects again back to individual patients, where, you know, that may differ in disease severity, age, and so forth.
That's a very, very good summary. And I think the example from the typical study result, yeah, and what we see on clinicaltrials.gov and what regularly gets published in the literature is lacking all of that. Yeah, we just do the subgroups. And so my perception is, from a bigger picture, we are quite far away from this personalized medicine. Yeah. It is, you know, when I look into any report, it is very, very hard for me to understand what is my baseline risk in the study? What is the potential benefit for me?
Some of the questions you will not even be able to answer, right? Like baseline risk is very difficult to ascertain from clinical trials, because the selection that you have in clinical trials is, you know, the patient that you find in clinical trials usually will not be very representative of the patients you encounter in clinical practice. So especially if you have questions about baseline risk, these type of questions are very difficult to, you know, to, I mean, you can get estimates, of course, from clinical trials on baseline risk. The key question is whether these estimates are going to be anyhow representative, you know, for you as a patient or for clinical practice.
That is a good question. That is a good remark. Yeah, it's not only is it about, okay, what is the treatment effect that is for me, and how can you reliably kind of extrapolate from the data set you have in the clinical trials to me as a patient that may not be actually eligible to that particular study because of anything? And how much would that make a difference? Yeah? Because very often the indication is wider than, you know, the original studies, or at least to some extent, there are differences. Thanks so much. That was a great first introduction into personalized medicine. What it is, what it is not, yeah? Where are challenges in terms of what we are currently doing in terms of, for example, just reporting clinical studies in our study reports, into our publications, into clinicaltrials.gov. And what are ways we can build models to make better informed decisions for persons rather than populations? Thanks so much, Thomas, for this first episode. Is there any last things that you would like the listener to take away from this episode before we, in the future, get into further details on this topic?
Yes, maybe. Yeah, one thing I would like to share, because I'm currently editing a book on comparative effectiveness and personalized medicine research. where we will have like experts on these topics from, I think we have more than 40 at the moment, authors that are contributing to the book. And so a lot of the topics we are touching upon today, but also in the successive podcasts, are, you know, we will dive into this in much more detail in the book. And the book is, I mean, is expected, I think, next year to be published. So, I mean, it will take a bit of time still before we get there. But in the meantime, I mean, I run every now and then, I run some courses on this topic as well. And so, I mean, if this is basically, essentially, if this is a topic that you would like to be, you know, more familiar with, if you would like to dive into a bit more, feel free to, you know, to reach out and we can discuss to see what, you know, what is possible, how we can help with that.
Thanks so much for that great advice. And as I mentioned at the beginning, you will find all the links to how to contact Thomas in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and thanks for the great discussion, Thomas.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
This show was created in association with PSI. If you have not yet checked out the conference, or if you missed the conference, if you want to look at it again because you participated, then you can have a look into the recordings of that. You get these for a small fee from the homepage of the Effective Statistician, and just check it out there. Thanks to Rain and her team at VVS who helped with the show and actually also with the conference in the background. Thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.